Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Get out the bunting, pop the champagne. Levante have won a match. Hooray! Real Sociedad also won for the first time since November. Osasuna also won for the first time since October. More good news for the hard-pressed underdog. Finally, Baldies have been given protected status. Yes, when Alex Moreno of Real Betis lifted his boot into a high challenge with Izzy Palace on, the referee Alejandro Muniz initially thought it was worth a yellow card. But then he saw the extensive bleeding suffered by the follically challenged Rayo Vallecano attacking midfielder, and he upgraded it to red. Now, had it been Santi Comesaña, Oscar Trejo on the receiving end of the boot, then the thick bush of hair would have prevented the injury that made it look like something out of Casualty, and it would have been a booking and no more. Betis were furious. Spanish clubs are now taking to calling out referees on social media. Betis basically implied that he was a cheat. Valencia say they were robbed against Real Madrid. Pique joined in on their side, but then Unai Emery came in and said, well, what about our game against Barca? And if we all keep complaining like this, the Spanish Peter Walton will emerge. Nobody wants that. I think refs should be allowed to respond in kind and start tweeting about how bad the players are. Pique, if you were half as fast on the pitch as you are on Twitter, Barca would still be in the Champions League, mate. Valencia, if you'd have beaten Real Madrid if Maxi Gomez wasn't plodding around like a hippopotamus. And Oblak, mate, what happened to you? You used to be Lev Yashin and now you're Xabi Irueta. Yes, there was some action to talk about. Let's be honest, though, only two teams in La Liga know how to win games on anything like a consistent basis. There's a 10-point gap between second-place Sevilla and third-place Betis. A further 10 points further back, you get to 13th-place Granada. We'll moan about the refs and moan about the people moaning about the refs as well. We'll celebrate the good bits, of course, Angel Correa's goal for Atleti. You know, I'm beginning to suspect they made a minor error in signing more attacking players rather than strengthening their defence, but I'm not the expert. That's Terry Gibson. Unless, Terry, you've changed your name, Rafinha style, and are now calling yourself Terence Bradley. Yeah. interesting development. We'll get to Rafinha's re-emergence. No, actually, what's it? No, Rafael. Rafael Alcantara. Yeah. As he's now... Same bloke. Okay. And yes, and all of the controversy. So, I mean, I think on a serious note, I'm taking the mick out of the referee. You know, referees make mistakes. Yeah.
Yep.
Most people, I did a quick poll on Twitter. How bad is, what's the standard of refereeing in La Liga? 25% said scandalous, 42% said poor, 27% said fine, and 6% said good. So most people, but I think you could do that poll about in any country at any time.
Yep.
And people, I don't think they're great, but I do think it's a terrible thing for clubs to be calling them out on social media. Unless you've got a specific allegation that they're cheating against you, then take it to the authorities. But if they just make mistakes, you can't have clubs calling them out, can you? That's not, you can't be doing that. Or am I wrong?
I guess it get no, I agree with you. It's not the right thing to do. And I guess, though, if some clubs must feel that they just consistently don't get the rubber to green.
Betis did it. They're drawn with Rayo Vallecano. There's no conspiracy in favour of Rayo Vallecano.
No. So I don't understand that. I didn't understand Bordalas, I have to be honest. He was furious about Real Madrid's penalty. I thought it was a penalty.
Yeah.
I thought it was a foul. I genuinely thought it was a foul.
Would that have been a foul 20 years ago? Or was it a bit of a...
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. Because I thought it was a bit of a modern one in that once there's contact, they feel obliged to give it now. I was thinking that. Casemiro broke to the edge of the box, didn't he? And there's a tangle of legs and he goes over and stuff. It's not a scandal, is it? It's not they go Real Madrid again. Yeah.
I thought he had his legs swept away. Right, I think Casemiro was changing direction. Mm-hmm. He was going from left to right with the outside of his right foot. So he's running at pace. He intercepted a terrible pass from Gaia. That was where Bordalas should have been furious with. 2 minutes before half-time, your left back, who I have the utmost respect for, he doesn't normally make those poor decisions. He passes it infield straight to Casemiro, straight in towards the heart of defence, and Alderete comes across. I don't think it was the bump. I think if you look at the bump, I don't think that was enough for the foul. But he does put his right leg out, was behind his left, to try and make some attempt to win the ball. And as Casemiro chops the ball to his right, there is a collision of tangle legs and he goes down. I didn't think it was a scandal, that one at all. The Betis one with Issy Palazon, I understand their frustration. As a fellow baldy, it does look worse if you do nick your head. I nick my head shaving like that and it ends up sometimes like that. but it doesn't mean that I deserve a punishment. So, it was a nasty blow, but I don't think Moreno in any way meant to commit the foul.
Izzy Palace was down low,
a yellow card.
Yeah, he ducked really low down, didn't he? Yeah.
And Moreno was clearly going for the ball. Yeah. He wasn't trying to kick someone in the head. So after that, that was a poor decision. Big decision as well, and it was a poor decision. But I'm trying to think, there was the Atletico, the Villarreal Atletico game had a bit of controversy in it as well, which has led to an Emery and PK having a spat. I didn't think there was too much wrong in that either, to be honest. The Villarreal penalty decision came shortly after Lamar claimed a penalty for Atletico in not too dissimilar circumstances. I mean, I don't think Pau Torres, when he puts he's trying to keep his arm in close, and I don't think it was a penalty. But then I'm not so sure at the other end of the pitch either that Lamar then tried to handball. It was close range, wasn't it? It was thumped to him with speed. He's tried to get his arm react quickly. And then we had the controversy on the penalty miss from Gerard Moreno.
So he saves it, doesn't he? And it bounces up.
Yeah.
And Parejo, he jumps
bundles
in.
Bundles it in.
Are you giving a goal or not?
I wouldn't have given the goal.
Because a lot of this, because again, we can dispute these, can't we? Because the fact that we're debating them shows that they're not. It's not a scandal that referees need to be sacked wholesale to this. No. He jumps and he turns his side and he sort of sides it, doesn't it? But
yes,
it probably is a little bit of a brush off the arm. And the rule is any touch off the arm for the scorer is no goal.
So and then again, there were about six players in the penalty area as well.
Yeah.
Which makes it even more confusing. Mm. And Parejo made his run from outside the D, and he was borderline whether he was in it or not.
Yeah.
So it was hard for me to stop it at the exact time to check.
It was given for the handball, though, wasn't it?
I think. So I think that wasn't hugely controversial. Kondogbia's second yellow might have been, he might have got away with that one, but
he looked like
significant. He just got in the way, didn't he?
He stood on his foot.
Lean across and block someone.
Yeah, but he didn't look like... I mean, he looked furious, but he didn't look like he'd been cheated or anything, did he? He went off, didn't he? You know?
Yeah.
I think the commentator said
he had rubber to green, didn't they?
Yeah. I think the commentator said he looked okay. He didn't look too worried about it. I wouldn't stop him right now. If Jeffrey Kondogbia were walking past me with that look on his face at that moment, I wouldn't stop for an interview.
Levante had a rubber the green in their game against Mallorca as well.
Yes, they did. So we start with that one. Should we do that one? Yeah, it's the first time in living memory that Levante have won a football match. first time since April, and the record, but it's off. It's the monkey is off their back. It is done, isn't it? And they've won a game against Mallorca. Soldado and Morales with the goals, but Mallorca, they messed it up, really, didn't they? The awful penalty that should have got them level.
Olivan,
he'd
only just come on as a sub as well.
Yeah.
And he looks super confident. In terms of grabbing the ball and I'm taking it, and then had
a
30-second spell before taking the penalty, where suddenly you looked at him and you thought, that one of those where you're sitting there watching it and thinking, don't fancy him at all. He suddenly went from super confident to, oh, what have I done? And then didn't have a plan and then didn't do anything. And it was Aitor Fernandez made a comfortable save. Then there was a controversy over a couple of disallowed goals as well. But who's to say Levante haven't had much of in terms of luck go their way in the last 28 matches? So perhaps they've been due a good fortune. Soldado, fortunate with the goal as well. It was a dreadful finish. Leo Roman was the new Mallorca goalkeeper, young goalkeeper. Didn't make a great attempt to make the save. Soldado slotted it home to make it 1-0. From then on, it was, as you'd expect, for a team that have literally forgotten how to win a game of football. I have no idea what their frame of mind would have been week in, week out, particularly after last week when they got thumped 5-0. Third manager of the season. We'd kind of forgotten about the one that was the second one. I suddenly realised that the week, Javier Pereira, he was there for a few games. Now they've got Alessio Lisci, who's... Listen, he's won the first game that Levante have won this season. Incredibly, they're only 5 points from safety. And do you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're going to survive. Because nice. I think they've got decent players. When I look at the players they've got, the frame of mind, as I say, I have no idea what frame of mind they've been in. Soldado was close to tears in his emotional interview after the game. You consider he's 36, all that he's been through in his career, for him to be as emotional as he was after winning a game of football for Levante after 28 games, it just goes to show the strain. They were awful. I mean, the reason I suggest I think they will stay up is because they're better than what they've shown. They've got good quality going forward. They've got decent quality in midfield, particularly in the wider areas with Bardi and Campagna. Malero's decent when he plays in midfield as well. Defensively, they do struggle. They struggle at the weekend. They make all the wrong decisions. But I think that's a process of 28 games, 27 games prior to that without winning a game of football. It must seem like this the hardest thing in the world to actually get the win across the line. They've been in winning positions. They've been leading in games. They've conceded late goals. All sorts of dramas that have gone against them. So at the weekend, when I'm watching Robert Pierre slam into that challenge, give away a stupid penalty, that's kind of indicative of the mentality of Levante, the failure to clear their lines at times, the poor decision-making from the defenders at times when they're trying to play out the back instead of clearing it, or when they're clearing it, they're not putting enough weight on the clearance and it's going straight to an opponent. They was inviting Mallorca on. They got deeper and deeper. Morales gets the second goal, which is the last kick of the game. But up until that point, they were clinging on by their fingertips to the one-goal lead. It almost looked inevitable they were going to lose the one-goal lead and Mallorca were going to score. But Mallorca in a sticky period as well. Mm. They started the season off well. They've not been so good of late. Their form is pretty poor. I think it's one win in the last 12. So there's two or three teams in the league. Some of them won at the weekend. But there have been maybe three or four teams in the league have been on winless runs. But Levante now, 5 points from safety. That's the next mission, isn't it? Winning a game of football was the immediate one. And now, I can't believe there are a team that's won, didn't win a game in the entire first half of a season, are still 5 points away from safety. It should be dead and buried, shouldn't it? But, I mean, they've drawn eight games. How many of those could have gone either way where they could have nicked the win? So it'd be interesting to see some sort of human experiment now, isn't it? To see that these players have been tortured for 27 games of football. And I can't wait. It's a shame we're going to have to wait a couple of weeks. And I think their next two games are against teams that are down the bottom of the division as well. They have to take an example from Getafe, who sorted themselves out. Likewise, I thought Getafe are good players and should stay in the division. Looks like that's going to be the case now with them. You can turn it around pretty quick. And if you actually have that belief again, the world's a different place for the Levante players now than it was on Friday. And, you know, they might respond with two or three wins in the next three or four games and suddenly they're back in the pack and got a chance of it.
Shall we go to the top? Real Madrid got a 4-1 win against Valencia, refereeing controversy. Aside, if you like. Or you can talk about the refereeing controversy if you want to. Benzema got two. Vinicius got two. Geddes. Valencia got a penalty. He was saved and he scored on the rebound with their header. I mean, this is a good win for Real Madrid, wasn't it, given the setback in their previous game?
Yes, it was. It was an interesting game to start with. First 10-15 minutes, I thought Valencia were more than in the game. Hesitant start from Real Madrid. It became more even to the extent that at half time, at 43 minutes, it looks like it's going to be going in at 0-0. Bearing in mind, Real Madrid have struggled to score against Getafe and Cadiz recently. Valencia are better than both of those two teams, and you're thinking this is going to be a tricky 90 minutes for Real Madrid. And then Gaia gives the ball away poorly, bad decision. In the left-back position, midway in his own defensive half, and he plays the ball inside. There was no Valencia player there to pass to. He just gives it straight to Casemiro, intercepts it. He breaks forward, gets brought down on the edge of the penalty box, just inside. And then Real Madrid get the lead with Benzema. Smashing penalty, that one was top corner. And then from then on, it wasn't a game. And then Valencia came in the second half, dispirited, demoralised. didn't show any fight, didn't show any inclination to get back in the game to the extent they conceded a second one early in the second half. And that was done and dusted then. Real Madrid did take their foot off the gas, which allowed Valencia to score, but they soon responded and made the scoreline what it actually should be. A 4-1 win was pretty comprehensive for Real Madrid. Terrible performance. I'm glad you mentioned Maxi Gomez. I thought it was just me. You know, you play away from home, and there will be another player in similar circumstances that we'll speak about probably in the next game. You play away from home, and you know that you're going to be pinned back by Real Madrid. If you're playing at the Bernabeu, if you're Valencia, you know when you get the ball forward into the attacking half, it's so important for the centre forward to hold the ball up, to allow time for teammates to get into more attacking advanced positions. But he didn't. He just kept losing it. And, you know, he's a big, strong player that needs to throw his weight about more. He needs to be more proactive in terms of chasing people down, chasing lost causes, working the channels. When the ball goes into his chest, it's important he gets hold of it and keeps hold of the ball. Because as a midfield player or an attacking fullback in particular, you can't make those runs forward to join up in support if you're not convinced your centre forward's at it, and he's going to hold on to the ball and it's just going to keep coming back. So what is the point of making those supporting runs if it's just going to keep coming straight back? You're doing doggies up and down. So I thought that was a poor performance from Valencia. Bordalas can moan about the penalty decision, but, you know, after conceding the first goal, there was no excuse for them playing with as much hope as they showed. Lack of ambition, lack of fight, lack of hope. Been playing well lately as well, but a couple of defeats on the trot. Going into this game, they were only 4 points off the Champions League spot. So you would have thought that would have been playing Real Madrid, away from home, been decent form, lost to Espanyol the week before. Can we bounce back? I think they've gone 8 without defeat before that. But they didn't show any of that. So that was, I was disappointed in the performance of Valencia, but Real Madrid, Vinicius, superb again. Benzema, superb again. No Hazard at all. I think I'm off the bench. Midfield was, as you'd expect, the back four looked reasonably solid. So all round, a really good performance from Real Madrid.
Nice. Big tick for Real Madrid. And the only team, there's a two-horse race, isn't it? We've got a 10-point gap, which is extraordinary, isn't it? Is that Sevilla are doggedly staying with them, aren't they? You know, a 1-0 win against in-form Getafe. They don't gamble much, do they? Sevilla, it's not exactly thriller minute stuff, but if you want a title race in La Liga, then it's a good thing that Sevilla are able to grind out wins. I think it's 4-1-0s out of their last six games, and a 2-1 and a draw. So, you know, they're doing it the hard way.
I would say they have been hampered though in recent weeks with injuries and COVID and stuff like that. So I think it's an awkward period of the season for them. And I think they've done a really good job because Getafe, they've been in a really good run of form. The only other game they've lost recently was Villarreal away, Sevilla away, 1-0, both games 1-0. So Getafe having beaten Real Madrid the week before, a decent team, hard opponents. They're not easy to play against at the moment. Sevilla got lucky in this one. David Soria makes a blunder for the goal from the near post back heel finish from Rafinha. One that he clearly should have saved. Made other good saves, though, as well. So it's just the nature of the goalkeeping position, isn't it? He can make 4 or 5 good saves, but the one mistake is the one that ultimately has cost your team a point. So Sevilla just making do at the moment. As I say, they've had a number of injuries. They've got players away in the African Cup of Nations. So I think that under the circumstances, I wouldn't expect them to be expansive, but they're getting the job done. Unfortunately, you can't say the same about the others.
I thought you were allowed to call games off, Terry, if you had African players in your team.
And players injured as
And a couple out of form.
Don't start me on that.
And the left back, left-back's rubbish. We'll call the game off because he's no good. Apparently.
These are Premier League clubs with 50 professionals at least. If you include the under-23s, some of the under-18s are probably professionals. If they can't muster together enough players to play, is absolutely
exciting. Because Leicester, on the explanation, they mentioned the Africa Cup of Nations. You think, well, you knew, mate. You knew they were Africans when you signed them. You know they play the Africa Cup of Nations. You can't suddenly, we'll have to call our name off. No, play your game. You know what,
I get it. If a club has had to shut down, basically, because that could happen.
Yeah.
If there's COVID all over the place and you can't get together the players safely enough to train, to travel to games, to be in the changing rooms together, I get that. That then the games can't be played. Mm. But we what we're seeing now is they're picking their games. That we've got an FA Cup match against a lower league team. We can play that one because I was going to rest players anyway. But then it comes to a Premier League game. I know Leicester played Watford. They're not a lower league team, but there were other teams that were contemplating calling these games off, that are contemplating calling games off this week, but they're able to field a weakened team in the FA Cup against a lower league team. So it's absolute nonsense. What must you feel if you're a 20-year-old boy, 20-year-old young man, playing under 23 football as a professional, and you've probably been a professional for 2 or 3 years, and your team are trying to get games called off because they don't want to use you. Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, there'll be 18, 17, 18-year-olds at clubs that are professional footballers. So my estimate will be most Premier League clubs will have at least between 40 and 50 bona fide professional footballers.
Yeah, paid a fortune.
And
paid exactly. Proper money, some of these young fellas, aren't they? Yeah, more than La Liga players. More than the bottom half of La Liga clubs will be paying some of these players, but it's not safe to let them go out and play football.
So Sevilla have been in a tricky position recently and they haven't complained. I don't expect them to be expensive. I hope they are in the future, but at this moment in time, then I feel that I even look at Sevilla now. I think there's one or two players playing injured as well because of the lack of bodies. So, no, full marks, top marks to Sevilla. Tricky game against Getafe. A narrow win, but it does keep the title race interesting.
What do you make of Barcelona then, Terry? The Barcelona legend, that is Luke de Jong, got a goal, but they couldn't see it through. Lost Gavi to a red card. Got to say, he likes to tackle, doesn't he, the young man?
Yeah.
And then they couldn't see it through. Granada got themselves a late equaliser. Go on, give us your assessment.
Well, there's a few topics in this one. I'd be interested to know people's reaction to the disallowed goal from Luke de Jong. Because there was three passes after Gavi was slightly offside. I don't know the interpretation in terms of the next phase of play.
Yeah.
So Gavi drifted offside by a fraction, didn't they?
Yeah.
And then got back onside. And then there was three passes before Gavi then crossed it into the box to De Jong. Everybody assumed De Jong might have been offside. That was the initial thought process was he offside? He wasn't. But then they took it back to, as I say, three passes earlier.
Found this eventually. Yeah.
It looked to me again that they're finding a reason to justify the decision to disallow the goal. So I don't know when that next phase of play starts. Where the previous one ends.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah,
how long is it?
Yeah.
It was 5, 6, 7 seconds probably in terms of three passes of the ball before the no one appealed for the initial offside. So that was a big call. I think De Jong should have had a penalty as well when he went through and he was just shoved in the back and went down. I think that was a clear penalty, clear foul. And Luke de Jong was, I mean, he turned into Zlatan in that first half. He scored a goal, he was disallowed a goal, had the scorpion kick that just went over the crossbar. I'm genuinely pleased for a really good, solid, honest, professional footballer that is better than people suggest. I'm not suggesting for 1 minute he's Barcelona standard, but he's doing a good job. And I think, he's turning opinions around. Do I see a long-term future for him at Barcelona? Of course not. But it might be longer than we thought. And they might decide to keep him around till the end of the season. And I was surprised to the extent I was surprised when he got substituted after an hour. What we've seen is from Barcelona is I can see the differences. I mean, they're using De Jong, Luke De Jong. When they get the ball wide, they cross the ball into the box a bit quicker than they normally have done. But why wouldn't you do that? And we haven't mentioned Danny Alves yet. We'll come to him in a minute. But I'm seeing more enthusiasm for winning the ball back quicker, to the extent they're fouling too much, to the extent that Gavi. It was actually interesting. I thought it was personal between him and Collado. I noticed it immediately. Collado had a swing at him earlier. Gavi withstood the challenge and stopped. He was running away from Collado, who slide tackled him and missed, and then had a swipe at him. And Gavi ran away with the ball, but stopped and had a look back as if to say, yeah, right, you sure? And there was three or four challenges between the two of them prior to the sending off. So that was the inexperience of Gavi. I say it looked personal to me. It was a 22-year-old Collado who's not played for Barcelona first team against a 17-year-old who's gone straight into the first team and playing there. He's now out alone at Granada. And it looked like there was something that had gone on between the two of them that was quite immature, to be honest, but quite funny to watch. To the extent I was watching it, waiting for commit the second booking. It was probably something that Barcelona could have witnessed, Xavi could have witnessed, or someone could have said to Xavi, be careful of him, he's at it with Collado, they're at it with each other. And he did get sent off for a foul on Collado eventually. In saying that, they didn't need to suffer as much as they did, even with 10 men. The big change was De Jong coming off and Memphis Depay going on, and Abde coming on as well, particularly because Barcelona, Philip got in touch with on Twitter, who's been a guest on the podcast, and he said about Barcelona losing control of games later in the match, and they should play the possession game more, which Xavi made the point himself. But when you get the ball forward, like Maxi Gomez and Memphis Depay keeps giving it away, or Abde just goes on a run, which is positive to see from a young player. His only thought is when he gets the ball, he's to be positive, to get his head down, run at defenders, to take them on. He probably should have scored the second for Barcelona to wrap up the win. It wasn't an easy chance, but he worked the position well and got a good opportunity. But they failed to keep the ball in the attacking half. So you can play possession-based football, but it needs to be in the attacking half. And Xavi made the point about he wants his team to defend with possession, with the ball, which is what the great Barcelona teams have done in the past. But it's been in the attacking half as opposed to passing it around your own penalty area, deep in your own half. I made the point to Philip, that's because there's been a deterioration in the attacking quality of Barcelona in terms of personnel. So therefore, the opposition now, Granada are not looking at that game thinking, right, we're 1-0 down, we've got to really push forward. There will come a time in any game, if you're only 1-0 down, you can do that. You have to do that. It's an obligation. But in the past, you would have thought, we won't do it yet because we've got Messi, Neymar and Suarez, or Pedro and David Villa. You know, we can't push on. But now when you're playing Barcelona, you can look at anything. You've got Luke de Jong, Memphis, Jukla, Abde, Ilias, one or two others. You, as a Granada defender, you might be able to think a bit more freely now in terms of, if we do push on, we can probably go man for man at the back against these two or three, not only because of the quality, but the pace as well. So I think that's what's really hurt Barcelona, is the deterioration in the quality up front. I know I've praised De Jong, but it isn't Messi and it isn't Neymar and it isn't Suarez, and it'd be silly to say that. So I think that's why Barca teams are more braver now against Barcelona, is because they're not as fearful of what's going to be coming the other way. Messi was playing for Barcelona and he was out ambling around for 10, 15 minutes, but he was in the attacking half.
Yeah.
You still wouldn't have the nerve with 25 minutes to go to think, well, if I push forward, he's not going to track me back. But if we lose the ball, he's going to score. So now teams are looking at it and thinking, well, I can push forward because I might be able to get back with the pace of these ones. So Memphis was a big disappointment. He did the Maxi Gomez. He lost the ball too much. So therefore, Barcelona couldn't keep possession, down to 10 men, defending deeper. Eric Garcia went off injured. Longley comes on. Injury issues. But they should have controlled that game better. But Dani Alves, incredible performance.
Yeah.
38 years old, played the whole game. Had the sense to know, did make the goal. Had the sense to know that he could deliver a ball from deep, pick out Luke de Jong for the goal. He was a phenomenal performance from Dani Alves. For someone who hasn't played for ages, he was absolutely superb in that game.
So they haven't yet registered Ferran Torres, have they? Which is just a weird situation, isn't it? That they because you sort of think, you know, from if you want a strong Barcelona in La Liga, I think even the Real Madrid fans who are the anti-Barca people who listen to us surely want, you know, competitive Barcelona, right? And they're going for the Champions League places. So you want them surely to start making good decisions again. Not necessarily saying it's a bad signing in the long run, Ferran Torres, but why sign him if they can't register him? It just, you've got until January 31st. There's no other bid. There's no bidding war going on for him. So there's no race to get him signed up. Getting Coutinho going to Villa hasn't apparently freed up enough money to register Ferran Torres. They've still got something else to do before they can sign. Otherwise, they've got a 55 million euro player just training. What am I missing? It's bizarre.
Yeah, I don't know whether they can deregister other players if push comes to shove.
I guess you have a choice.
So complicated.
Yeah, I guess you send someone to the B team.
The whole system. Yeah. Whether they could deregister someone, and I don't think they'd be able to send them to the B team if it was because it's going to have to be a senior player.
Yeah.
Therefore, you're not going to be able to, if you can't move him on loan, if you can't sell him, you can deregister him, but they're not going to be playing in the B team because there'll be a senior player that just won't accept that. So it's an interesting, as always, situation trying to get your head around why Barcelona made these decisions. I like the fact they're active. I like the fact they've been able to move Coutinho on. I'm sure they have a plan to move one or two others on as well. But it is, you know, it's a tricky situation. And they're trying their best. They're one or two players coming back as well. So say, I was moaning about the quality up front. If you get Fatty back as well, and you get Ferran Torres back in the team, then suddenly, if you're one of those defenders for Granada at the weekend, you're looking in thinking, oh, I won't go just yet, leave it to the last 5-10 minutes, then maybe we'd have got no choice but to attack. But in that time, Barcelona might have scored a second. So I think they definitely are being hurt by the lack of quality in the front positions. And Ferran Torres, I guess that's the reason why they've signed him. They're desperate to get Fatty back. Braithwaite would be half decent as well. You know, he's been injured for a while. So the situation is what it is. But Barcelona definitely showing signs under Xavi, trying to win the ball back, be more aggressive to the extent they're giving away too many fouls. And Gabby's a learning curve for a 17-year-old. But for a long period of the game, I thought they were decent. And Granada in their best form of the season. We know they've got deep, good players. Wasn't ever going to be an easy game for Barcelona. Now Granada are back playing to something like their best. But a game when they were up, they probably should have controlled and should have won.
I've got annoying light aircraft going over and round in my house. It's really annoying, Terry. But you probably can't hear it. We worry too much about sound quality and stuff, I think. Anyway, so sorry if you can hear it. Sorry if the sound quality isn't perfect. Anyway, we get to the best game. Finally got to the best game, too. Villarreal 2,
Alaves Athletic.
Villarreal 2-2 draw with Atletico, and certainly the best goal, Angel Correa, with a brilliant bit of improvisation. And that's what, when I said at the beginning, you know, they keep signing attacking players. When they got Angel Correa there, it showed us what he's about. Yeah. But they can't defend. And the kid that they've got in goal, Atletico, Terry, is a real ropey player. I've never heard of him. You know, this Oblak chap. It was an awkward one, wasn't it?
The first goal, which is the one he makes the mistake on when Pau Torres scores, where the free kick evades everybody and drops just down at his feet, doesn't it? And
so that's the first near post
and he fumbles it, doesn't he?
And then
makes a mess of it.
When Pau Torres comes in and shoots, he totally mishits the shot, doesn't he? And Oblak's, whereas he was a brilliant reaction goalkeeper, and he will be again. But he sort of lets a really poor shot dribble past him because he's obviously his eyes shut and he's flinching. And you think, mate, you should have saved that.
You could have saved that. So that was a bit, I thought it was just me. I thought this was one of the highest speed games I've seen in the Liga for a long time. But Atletico in particular started the game off so quick with their closing down. And then Villarreal responded. And both teams, because of this high pressure in terms of closing down, fast closing down, both teams responded by showing their quality under pressure. which is what I love. I love that about football. Mm. I love it sometimes when the best players and Villarreal, Atletico both got really top class players. When they have to work quicker because they're under so much pressure and they're still willing to accept the ball and want to take the ball, knowing that someone's going to come flying in with a challenge, but they trust their touch, the weight and the pass has to be correct, the movement to try and create space to receive any pass has to be at its best. And that it was almost like it was a wild game of football, to be honest. And both teams contributed. Both teams were brilliant in the ball. Both teams were brilliant out of possession in the ball. Correa's goal was sensational. Simeone had to react by bringing on changes, substitutions. I feel both teams deserved something from the game because they both played well. It was a really, really, really good game of football. Really enjoyed that one. And I thought, watching it here, I'm not on social media watching it. I'm watching the game, listening to the commentary and thinking this is genuinely a top class game of football. And that's exactly what it was. Someone described it as wild. I saw it was like a wild game of football. The tackles were flying in. Everyone was playing so fast at the right tempo. It was a fantastic match.
So let's unpick a bit. So what else do we need to talk about? Oh, you briefly talked about the Kondogbia, the red card at the end, didn't you? So I've forgotten the...
That was a consequence, I think, of both teams, particularly in midfield, really trying to nail each other. Because they've got respect for each other in terms of, well, we can't let him have time on the ball. We can't let him have time on the ball. Then everyone was looking to close down quickly. Similar tactics from both managers, both got good players. So a consequence of that is in the 90-odd minutes that Kondogbia was on, there was a fair chance any of the midfield players were going to be responsible for a couple of bookable offences. So it certainly wasn't a massive fault of Kondogbia. His job is to get in there, to break things up. Scored his first goal. I'm surprised when I saw that, his first goal for Atletico. Good finish to get them. I think a deserved equaliser. João Félix was good when he came in as well, made a difference. The quality is there in terms of attacking play for Atletico. Linked with Daniel Vaz to come in to replace Kieran Trippier, which I guess is a stopgap one, which I'm kind of surprised about. It looks like they didn't have a plan. Therefore, they shouldn't have let Trippier leave. I bemoan the fact Trippier has left. I'm surprised he went on a 2.5-year contract to Newcastle, because I think if I'd been his agent, I'd have been asking for a 4.5-year deal from Newcastle.
Yeah. And not a massive
to leave Atletico Madrid. No, yeah, 2.5 million. Two and a half year contract.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that the whole deal went through. So Daniel Vaz, short gap. But we saw the problem with Alberto Moreno's goal. The centre backs all over the place. It didn't look a solid back four, as you said in the intro. They got João Félix on the bench. Cunha played well again. When he started out front with Correa, no Griezmann, no Suarez, injury or illness. I'm not sure why they were missing. And yet they've still got João Félix on the bench. So if they could have put some of that money, looking at it now, you have to ask, was it wise to buy João Félix?
No. And it's not a criticism.
You've bought Griezmann, you've got Suarez.
We've got too many attacking players and their centre-backs are no good. Yeah. It's you don't have to... Any other combination, the combination is wrong, isn't it? It's not necessarily saying that João Félix, it's not his fault, but yeah, the combination is wrong. The balance of the squad is wrong, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, missing Jimenez, they're missing Savage, probably their first choice too. Yeah. So Felipe and Hermoso playing together at the back in the back four, but it was evident when Moreno scores, there's a massive gap between the two centre backs. Hermoso's slow to react because Alberto Moreno is playing on the left. In the left midfield, but you've got to recognise the yellow shirt is in a position where he's going to run down the middle, and they failed to pick him up, and he scored the goal to put them VRL 2-1 up. So there's obvious weaknesses at Atletico, and an obvious, as you said, imbalance in terms of so many good attacking players.
Correa's goal.
Oh, it's brilliant because it's the skill. Listen, most players can hit a ball from just over the other side of the halfway line and reach the goal. But it's the speed, it's the thought process, how quick he reacts. And the touch, the first touch, intercepts a pass from Danny Parejo, which it wasn't a great pass from Parejo, but he didn't expect it within two touches and a couple of seconds for it to be screaming over the top of Geronimo Rulli in goal and flying into the... It's a Beckham goal from Manchester United against Wimbledon all those years ago. We do see it every now and then. But it is one where I think we probably look at the skill and the technique. But I think it's also, you have to remember that the thought process, the sharpness, the quick thinking when a player is in, is superb form, absolutely brilliant form. Angel Correa, you know, he's really persistent. He doesn't give up when he's not in the team on a regular basis. When he gets opportunities, he makes the most of them and then becomes a really important player, doesn't he, for Atletico? In recent weeks, he's been crucial to Atletico Madrid. Brilliant goal.
Let's just briefly talk about the football aspect of Rayo versus Betis. A 1-1 draw. So Rayo are still unbeaten at home. They've still got this terrific record. Betis scored a lovely goal, didn't they, there to take the lead. Canales on
good
the
timing.
End. So what? Yes, give us an assessment of that.
I think both managers would be happy with it. Yeah, the ultimate outcome. Rayo protect their unbeaten record at home. Betis run out of steam, which is understandable when you're playing for 60-odd minutes of the game, plus added on time with 10 men because of that incident we talked about earlier. Betis, probably if they had 11, would be disappointed they didn't hang on to win, have held on to the win, or maybe extended their lead. I think it's probably a game they could have won, to be honest. But Rayo pushed on. The pressure took its toll in the end. Balliou with a good goal as well. Not a lot of room to finish off close range. We picked out the top corner from close range. Rayo are decent at home. Everybody knows that. But I think Betis, if they have had the 11, might have been able to extend the lead and because they played well. But it was a decent result for both teams, to be honest.
Real Sociedad got a win as well. 1-0 against Celta Vigo. Oyarzabal, fit again. Oyarzabal with the goal and a debut for the former Celta Vigo. And of course, Rafinha, now Rafael Alcantara. I mean, it's an interesting signing. He's come from PSG, hadn't played for, I think, a couple of months at least. Hadn't played an awful lot at PSG, obviously. Interesting signing. Important for Real Sociedad to win a game, isn't it, after so long in La Liga?
Points in the six games prior, which see them go from top of the league to you know, really slipping out of the Champions League spots.
Because it's two and then a pack, isn't it? And they're still in that pack.
Yeah, and they've had injury issues, the accumulation of games as well, and then a loss of confidence in their La Liga form. So it was pleasing. This was a 1-0 win. It wasn't a narrow 1-0 win. It should have been 3 or 4 at the very least. Celta didn't have an attempt on target. Didn't create a half chance to. Aspas had one right near the end and hit the side netting. Rafinha, Rafael, Vinicius Junior, Vinicius is one of those. Rafael, I'm going to get used to it. He played well. He was attacking midfield. Mika Marino is back. He was the player that slid in Oyarzabal for the first goal. So the players coming back from injury do help. And I think Rafael will be a really good signing. A younger version of David Silva, possibly. So a more long-term vision there in terms of, I'm not sure if we're going to see David Silva around next season. I hope so. Always will. But he was missing in this game. And Rafael come in, took his chance well, was unlucky with a diving header. All the chances were for Real Sociedad. No chances at all for Celta. So a more dominant victory in this one than the 1-0 scoreline suggests. So Real Sociedad are back in the frame again. And I'm glad. You know, I didn't want to see them continue to struggle and slip down the league. They've put a lot of work in so far in the first half of the season. I want to see that rewarded.
This is the killer stat, isn't it, that the Patreons can see. Only 7 goals in home games, 10 home games. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. It is the second lowest.
Yeah. Yeah. But Cadiz.
Cadiz.
Yeah. And then, I mean, it's extraordinary from 10 games, isn't it, to be where they are. So, yeah. If you
15 over twice as many away.
Yeah. So Real Madrid have 49 points, but they played a game more than Sevilla, who got 44, and then a 10-point gap to Betis, 34, Atleti, 33, Real Sociedad, 33, Barcelona, 32, Rayo Vallecano, 31. And all of these teams, you know, you go down Villarreal. Athletic, Valencia, any of these put a run together, they're in the Champions League places, aren't they?
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Espanyol win a game tonight. They'd be what they would be level on points with Villarreal. So yeah, it's massively wide
four
open.
4 points. Yeah. Espanyol win tonight. They 4 points off Champions League.
Yeah. So what have we got to do? Oh, Osasuna, a win over Cadiz, who, as you say, are in a spot of bother, Terry, aren't they? An important one for Osasuna. Yeah.
Yes, it was. I didn't realise it went kind of under the radar, didn't it, that they hadn't won for such a long time, 10 without a win. I liked the lineup from Osasuna in this game. I think there's been a lot of tinkering about with Arasati. But in this game, he played Budimir and Kike Garcia up front. And that was, you know, he was almost looking. He looked at a team that were vulnerable and thought, actually, I'm going to play both of them today, instead of, as opposed to just one striker. And they destroyed them. To be honest, Kike Garcia, perfect cross for Budimir's goal. Baja with a second goal. It could have been more again. Cadiz are struggling big time.
Yeah.
To be honest.
And he seems to want to sack himself. He can just resign if he's so unhappy. You know.
I must admit, I check in now on a regular basis to see if there's going to be a change. Doesn't appear to be so at the moment. So they have faith in him. He got them up, kept them up. Can he do it again this season? Certainly, you know, plenty of football left to be played, but they do look like they need some more players brought in during the transfer window.
Yes, yes. Mbappe, Haaland, all of that lot. And leaves us with Alaves 0, Athletic Club 0. Yeah. Now, Athletic have been getting some goals of late, haven't they? And yet, I think we've gone back to,
let's not get carried away. Yeah. They had one game where they got three and one player got all of them. Sunset. So it was a close game. Not a lot in it. Alaves. Mendilibar's, he's gone with a two up front as well. It didn't pay off in this game, but they're going to be competitive, and you know they're in a position, Alaves, in the league where they can afford to play teams above them at home and believe that a point isn't a bad result if they can just keep chipping away. And they'll be hoping that the teams below them keep dropping points, and Mendilibar, that's how he's going to do it. Don't expect them to go all out attack, play creative, attractive football. It's going to be hard work. It's going to be graft. It was chucking down with rain from the first minute to last. It was freezing cold. It had a game that had to be played with players full of determination, which both teams were, but lacked that inspiration to come up with the quality to actually get a goal between them.
Classico Wednesday, Terry. I already mentioned it, have we?
I know.
If we get to this point, I'm not sold yet on the Super Cup tournament at all. It's a Clásico, so, you know. But I don't know, it's just a bit cynical, isn't it? To, you know, stuck another one in, basically.
Yeah, people are working hard to give it the promotion they think it deserves. We'll talk about it, of course, because there's two good games. And then the final, Athletic against Atletico, is the other tie, and then obviously the Clásico on Wednesday. No league football.
Weekend, 23rd, isn't it now? Yeah.
And then we've got an international break because of the South American World Cup qualifiers, which I've suddenly realised applies in the Premier League as well. So we've had these stop-start periods of the season. This is another, it's Copa del Rey next week because of the Super Cups. And next weekend, there are Copa del Rey fixtures. It's a Betis play Sevilla in that as well. So it's a decent one to look out for. I still preferred the old, if we're having the Super Cup, the games that we used to have at the beginning of the season. Or even then, I used to think it should just be a one-off.
Yeah, one game.
But it was two legs, wasn't it, home and away?
Yeah.
So now it involves four teams. And it's now played in the Middle East. It's a little bit disruptive, I would say.
Yes. Anyway, will be back with an edition of Super Coppa Weekly, as we're going to rebrand ourselves very soon. Don't forget to give us a Patreon. We need some Patreons. Because we need some money. That's basically how it works, basically. So there we are. Thank you for the Patreons who are with us. And we will see you all for another chat about La Liga and Spanish football, whatever we can find to talk about, soon.